2016. And this is the Roto Experts in the Morning. I am Greg Sussman, joined as always by Scott Angle, the King, and Adam Ronis for the Roto Experts in the Morning, only for free here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. Gentlemen, week five is in the books, minus Monday night, Carolina and Tampa tonight. But it was a fun week number five. Scott Angle, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. It was a busy day yesterday, especially towards the end, trying to flip back and forth between the Giants and Packers in the debate.
Absolutely. How was your week five, Ronis?
Pretty good overall. You know, I think a lot of players came through that we expected. So overall, still have a couple games in the balance tonight, but pretty good overall. And my Cowboys showed up and played a dominant game.
And the Eagles wound up losing. If the Redskins would have wound up losing, things would have really went your way.
Oh, that would have been great. Yeah. I always like when the Redskins lose.
Absolutely, especially when I thought they had a touchdown at the end of the game, the Ravens. It just didn't count. There's actually a lot of those games. A lot of those touchdowns didn't count, particularly in one game, which we'll get to in a second. But overall, I thought it was a really, really good weekend. I got an opportunity to really just sit and watch football all day, which was awesome. And it was fun. It ended on a sour note for me. But It was a fun day. I actually had two TVs set up Sunday night. Watched the Giant game on one. Watched the debate on the other. It was good. It was a good Sunday. And we are going to take you through game by game, points that we liked, points of interest to me, points of interest to both Scotty and Adam, and of course, points of interest to you. You want to contribute, tweet at us at FNTSY Radio, at Scott E. Roto X, at Adam Ronis, at myself, Greg Sussman, or give us a call, 844-843-6879, 844-84-FNTSY. Now, guys, I know none of us at this table are into patting ourselves on the back. It's just, we get enough crap wrong that when we get stuff right, there's no reason to pat ourselves on the back. However, I'm going to do just that. And I'll start with you, Scotty. All week long, I give you enough crap for things you got wrong, hinting Alex Collins. But when you nail something, you got to get credit for it.
Yes.
And
without always right. Yes.
None of us are right.
Yes.
But I want to start in Oakland because you kind of just really banged the drum slowly on Amari Cooper this week,
right?
And you said that people are going to watch the tape on Michael Crabtree. Not that Crabtree won't be involved, but Amari Cooper is just due for one of these breakout games, and it's coming, and there's a very good chance, especially with Jason Verrett out, Casey Hayward probably going to cover Michael Crabtree for a while. It very well could be this week for Amari Cooper. And for Oakland in a good game against San Diego, one that San Diego blew again.
Yes.
Amari Cooper did just that. Finished with 6 for 138 and 1. He probably should have had 6 for 204 or 9 for 204, whatever. A couple of touchdowns. I believe it was 2 or 3 of them. He only got 1 foot down in the end zone. And it was just a remarkable game for him. For Oakland, Derek Carr and the Raiders improved to 4-1. But Amari Cooper led this team in targets, just as you said he would. 12 targets, 6 catches, 138 yards. Michael Crabtree, 3 for 47-1. A good day for Amari Cooper and the Raiders.
Yeah, he could have had 2 more touchdowns.
Yep.
You know, if his feet were in and there was another call. So thanks for that. I think I'm more proud of my Chris Hogan pick, even though he got hurt. You know, 65-yarder.
He returned to the game.
And a 43-yarder. So I appreciate that, Greg. And, you know, but I'm a little more proud of the Hogan thing.
All right. Well, we'll get to Chris Hogan in a little bit later on. And the Patriots, of course, Tom Brady and his return. But, Adam, this is the game we were waiting for, I think, from Amari Cooper to just show up again. It's his first touchdown since December of last year. We're in October now. And you know what? The Raiders, they keep on going. Blackjack Del Rio going for it on a fourth down and like 4, I believe, from clear midfield-ish. It was a ballsy call. It resulted in the touchdown to Michael Crabtree. The Chargers are just snake bitten. We were talking, where I was watching football yesterday, about Mike McCoy. And like, I don't know what is his fault here. Sure. I did not like the run to Melvin Gordon on third down, taking the ball out of Phillip Rivers' hands, and the announcers were very critical of that, as they should have. Melvin Gordon, I think we'll talk about him, 16 carries, 69 yards, and a 24-yard long run, which kind of put his stats a lot better than they were. He looked like Melvin Gordon all year because he didn't get into the end zone yesterday. So these two teams, unfortunately, going the same direction they have for the Chargers all year and for the Raiders, that's a fortunate thing.
Yeah, well, the Raiders have had a good schedule to start. They're taking advantage of it.
As they should.
Cooper has at least 9 targets in 4 or 5 games, so he is seeing the football. The problem is he's had troubles in the red zone. Maybe this is part of the reason why they're not throwing him the football in the red zone. You know, he had a tough time with his footwork. Talked about him almost scoring some of the touchdowns, but he's really good after the catch. He was bound to get going. It was a great matchup yesterday. I mean, you're playing everyone against the Chargers right now. They're just a sieve defensively, and they keep blowing lead after lead. You're just waiting to see on a given week how they're going to blow another game.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And it's like I said, you can only blame Mike McCoy so much. Like, it's his fault the punter drops a perfectly snapped ball. Like, no, of course not. Yes, other things contribute. You got to get the ball in the end zone, all that stuff. But I just thought I wanted to start with this game because I thought there was a lot to take away. The running game, Ronis, with Jalen Richard, DeAndre Washington, very split down the middle. Can't really take away much from this.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people expected DeAndre Washington to do something, but we did know that Richard would be in the mix, and Alawale, too, at the goal line.
Alawale,
and that's
absolutely
exactly what happened. He scored on a 1-yard touchdown run. So they basically got about the same amount of touches. You know, Richard had 8 rushing attempts, 6 receptions for 66 yards. Washington, 5 for 29 through the air, 9 for 23 on the ground. So Richard did more with them, and we'll see how long Latavius Murray misses. But it seems like this is just going to be this way all year long, where they use all 4 with Alawale getting some touches near the goal line. So if you were banking on Washington having that breakout, you had to pick them up, and even Richard. If you lost that on one, you had to pick these guys up. They weren't must starts. If you were desperate at running back, you could have used them. It was a good matchup, and neither were great. It gave you decent production in a PPR, but no one basically ran away with the job to say, okay, if Murray's out next week, this is going to be the guy.
And I thought there was a similar response, Scotty, on the other side with San Diego, because we looked at the tight end situation. If Antonio Gates was coming back, was that the end of Hunter Henry? Should we be dropping him? Well, you know what? Both Hunter Henry and Antonio Gates find the end zone yesterday. Gates was targeted 5 times, finished 4 for 30 with a touchdown. Henry was targeted 4 times, 3 for 74 with a touchdown. And I think with all these injuries to San Diego with Keenan Allen and Danny Woodhead not, I give credit to San Diego using the weapons that they had. Tyrell Williams was fantastic yesterday.
Yeah.
Travis Benjamin was fantastic yesterday. And they continue to utilize Henry and Gates. As fantasy owners, can we utilize Henry and Gates going forward?
I feel like Henry was still involved yesterday, and Benny Riccardi said it really well in Lineup Lock last week that you know what you're going to get with Rivers, but you don't know who he's going to go to in any given game. And, you know, we saw him playing a pass defense that was allowing 340 passing yards per game coming in. So I think everybody was viable, but it really depends on the matchup. With Henry, he's that rare rookie tight end that has come in and made an instant impact in the passing game. But I think if Gates is there, you know, consistently, his role is going to be reduced. They're going to go to the wide receivers more. You saw Dontrell Inman be less of a factor.
Yep.
This could start happening with Hunter Henry. And I don't think you know in any given week whether it's going to be Tyrell Williams or Travis Benjamin. I think they're going to rely more on Williams than Benjamin. I think Benjamin's more of this downfield guy where they trust Williams more to move the chains.
I think, you know, honestly, Scotty, I think both of them are pretty trustworthy. I don't know if they're both playing 117.
If I had to say one of the two of them is a safer play,
yep,
I'm going to say Tyrell Williams.
Okay, and that's completely reasonable. I think with the amount this team throws the ball with Phillip Rivers, I do like both of them. However,
that's fair, yeah.
With that being said, Thursday night, a very tough game against the Broncos, and that makes it all the more tough. And I go back to Phillip Rivers, who, Ronis, has looked like quarterback one despite all these losses that he has had on his offense. He's performed like a QB1 mostly. Unfortunately, you run into Denver on Thursday night.
Yeah, he still has a lot of weapons here. I think that's the prevailing thought for most people was, okay, Keenan Allen is out. We saw what happened last year. But Tyrell Williams has emerged. He's a guy that can do things after the catch. He has Travis Benjamin now, who is someone that can take a short pass and break a long play, as we saw yesterday numerous times. He's got Henry, who was evolved along. Gates, who's back, who's not really moving that well, and he played a lot less snaps than Henry. They kind of used Gates in the red zone, third down plays, so we still saw a lot of Henry. And, you know, Dontrell Inman, who had one big game and was back to being quiet, but he does have a lot of weapons now, and they are playing well offensively. The defense has been a big problem for them.
The defense has been a big problem for them, unfortunately. And I talked about Phil Rivers and San Diego running into a tough Denver defense here on Thursday night. Tough Denver defense that actually held Julio Jones very much in check yesterday and yet still fell to an Atlanta offense, falling to the Falcons, who we got to wonder now, are they for real, winning 23-16? This was on the back of Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman. We have spent so much airtime and so much space in the Daily News and space on rotoexperts.com and written about, all right, Devonta Freeman or Tevin Coleman, right? We have talked endlessly trying to figure out what the Falcons are going to do, trying to predict who Kyle Shanahan was going to play. But Scott, I think the question needs to change, and we've talked about this before against New Orleans, which we all kind of threw out because it was the Saints. But now that it happened against the Broncos, where we thought Devonta Freeman could have a good game rushing with the middle, but Tevin Coleman through the air was also very successful. I think the question needs
to put it
change.
Lightly.
Right. Can we rely on a weekly basis on both Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman?
It looks like you can with Freeman because he's going to get the volume as a rusher. With Tevin Coleman, the shocking thing was is we thought that we were hardly going to see him at all because of the sickle cell trait, and he ended up exploding, you know, catching that second touchdown pass like he was a freaking wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So while they were so focused on Julio Jones, I give Atlanta credit coming up with an excellent game plan focusing on the running backs because, like Adam said last week, the way you need to beat them is on the ground because they'd have letting up 113 rushing yards per game, which was 12th in the league. But still, they drove down, and it was – let's give a lot – before I answer your question, finally, let's give a lot of credit to the defense. You know, the Broncos were missing their starting right tackle, and Denver was just crushing the pocket and harassing this rookie quarterback all day. So it was the running backs – and the defense, whereas Denver was focused on Julio Jones. Atlanta did a great job of game planning elsewhere. As far as Freeman, I think you can rely on him every week because there's going to be volume. And if he can get in the end zone against the Broncos,
he can get there against
that. And here's the thing about Freeman. Last year he hit a wall because he was overused. With Coleman in there, that's not happening. Coleman, look, not every guy is going to blow up every week, and there might be a down game or two, but I think these guys are both must starts. Freeman is a borderline RB1. Coleman is an RB2.
So both you are saying both guys right now you
with
can
the
trust
state, with the state
both
of
guys in your starting lineup.
With the state of running back, I think a lot of people within the context of their rosters would be very hard-pressed to find better options.
I absolutely agree with you because, Ronis, it's not like one of these guys is the passing back, one of them is the first two-down back. It's not that one of them is the goal line back. I mean, Freeman, I guess, maybe is getting more of those carries, but they're using these guys completely interchangeably. They're keeping both of them fresh, and they're both finding rhythms. I think they were using a two-running back system not as a third-down back or passing. They're using these guys completely evenly.
Yeah, I think Freeman is clearly the main back here. He's getting most of the carries.
But 23-6 yesterday.
Right. But Coleman's been explosive in the passing game. He's had some big receiving games already this year. He had 95 yards receiving week one and 132 this week. He's only had one bad game. That was in week four. Every other week, he's either gotten it done through the air or scored touchdowns. So he's a big part of this offense. I think he's going to get you about 10 to 12 touches a week. He's doing a lot with him. They're doing a great job putting the ball in his hands where he can get something done after the catch. And it's not like they have a lot of weapons in the passing game outside of Julio. It's not like they force feed it to anyone else. And their ground game is working. So they're going to continue to feed these two. So I think you can use both every week. Freeman, though, is clearly the superior back.
He is maybe the superior back, but like you said, both guys have this major, major role in the offense that, as Scotty said, right now you can trust both of them with the state of running back that we are in.
I think Freeman is the guy that you can rely on more, whereas Coleman, you don't know what his ceiling is going to be every week.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay, especially during these bye weeks.
I'm just saying comparing the two of them.
Again, great game plan by Atlanta, tough Denver defense, and I think Paxton Lynch was disappointing, obviously. He looked a bit jitterish to me in the pocket. He you could not count on him. You know, Emmanuel Sanders.
They were crushing the pocket.
They were.
About every time
they
came
were.
Back, especially from the left side. I mean, they were missing their starting right tackle, and it made a big difference.
Emmanuel Sanders finished 7 for 80. Demaryius Thomas, 5 for 49 and a touchdown. So both those guys, fantasy day-wise, they didn't hurt you. They did not kill you. You wanted more. I guess what we assumed to be a soft Atlanta defense. But overall, good day from the wide receiver. You're happy with it. Scotty, C.J. Anderson. Now, 11 carries, 41 yards. I know they're in comeback mode most of this game. They were down early. But he kind of split a lot more snaps with Devontae Booker than I think we, any of us, predicted or expected here. And I believe it was like 38-29, something along those lines. A lot more than we expected. Do we read anything into this?
I think we do. I mean, okay. I think we've in the past it's going to concern people that we've seen C.J. Anderson split carries with Ronnie Hillman and guys like that, you know?
Right.
So Booker got more run.
Back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Greg Sussman, Adam Ronis, Scott Engel, sitting with you on this Monday morning. And gentlemen, the Minnesota defense once again proved that they are something you simply do not want to mess with if you cannot. As you said, Ronis, with Denver, you have Julio Jones, you have to play him. You have DeAndre Hopkins, you have to play him. But in all honesty, you're just not happy with it because the Minnesota defense is that good. A 31-13 just takedown of the Texans, who have proven against good teams they're kind of utterly useless, I think. The Vikings, on offense, it was a disappointing day. Certainly for Kyle Rudolph, we thought would have a big game, a top-five tight end. And unfortunately, he really let you down. I believe that Kyle Rudolph is as good as it gets at tight end, but 2 for 15 is not going to get the job done. Stephon Diggs here going into the bye. I thought Rudolph was in for a big game. It didn't happen. It was all about Adam Thielen, who winds up with 7 for 127 and a touchdown. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
No, I mean, Diggs was out, so that certainly helped. And the offense moved the ball via the pass a little bit more maybe than what we thought. We expect Minnesota to be a running team. You know, we haven't seen much of Thielen so far. Just pedestrian games, you know, 4 for 40, things like that. But obviously he played a bigger role yesterday with 8 targets and hauled 7 of them in for 127 for a touchdown. Texans were a little banged up in the secondary. He lost Jonathan Joseph in the game. So the Vikings have a bye next week, though. So I would expect Diggs to be back and Thielen's role to diminish a little bit.
I'm sure, but it was a good game from Adam Thielen, obviously, right here. Cordero Patterson, once again, Scotty, has a role in this offense. Now, you know, it is what it is. It's nothing you can start on a weekly basis, I don't think. But I think he absolutely has a role in this offense now. 6 targets in the day, 4 for 39. He did a nice touchdown grab on the right side. Cordero Patterson, he's not what we wanted him to be once he, you know, at one point in life, but it wasn't awful.
Well, I don't think he's rosterable, really, especially when Diggs comes back. It'll be interesting to see now that Bradford has discovered Thielen, you know, will Thielen and Stephon Diggs become the top two wide receivers? Now, they both played the same role in the offense. I think it's flanker, but, you know, do they want to get both of them involved? You know, Cordarrelle Patterson doesn't run any quality routes. He's a gadget guy. In a 14-team league on a bye week, maybe I'd use him, but otherwise I'm not rostering him.
Okay. The running situation here, Ronis, disappointing because McKinnon had a chance, could not convert it, and Asiata did what Asiata does. 20 carries on the day for Jerick McKinnon. That's the good. 36 yards, not so great. Matt Asiata, 14 carries, 55 yards, and a touchdown. Matt Asiata'd us.
Yeah, McKinnon got a carry
chance
inside the red zone there, got it down to the inside the 5, and then they gave the carry to Asiata, who converted. the Vikings' offensive line is still a problem. They're just not run blocking well. That's the issue. It looked like they were better against the Giants last week, but it's the same problem that we saw a couple weeks ago, whether it was Adrian Peterson or McKinnon running the football. They're just not opening up enough holes. So that's the problem right now. We know that they want to run the football. It is going to be mostly McKinnon, but Asiata at times is going to snipe him with some goal line carries, but you just don't know when those are going to come, and that's why it's difficult to start Asiata.
And here's the other thing. Asiata not only sniped the goal line carries, but also he had two big catch and runs yesterday, and wasn't the first time we saw it this season. What happened with McKinnon is he got all the way down to the one on a run, so they kind of rewarded him by letting the goal line carry, and he got stoned right away. So then they put Asiata in, and then he got it on the second try.
Yep.
But I think we remember everybody got excited about McKinnon this week, including me a little bit too, because the way he played against the Giants. But 2 years ago, the same thing happened. Everybody got excited about McKinnon, and Asiata ended up being the more reliable fantasy player, because not that he was a special talent, because the team liked him because they felt he was fundamentally strong for what he lacked in talent, and they ended up putting him on the field just about the same amount of time as Jerick McKinnon, and he produced more. So that kind of concerns me. It's something I'm going to have to monitor going forward, and my enthusiasm for McKinnon is a little bit quelled now more than it was going into this week.
You know, so mine's not. I think this is exactly what we kind of expected here from Jerick McKinnon and Matt Asiata. Asiata going to have a role. He's going to get all the goal line touches for the most part. And Jerick McKinnon's going to lead this
McKinnon's
backfield.
McKinnon's numbers weren't good yesterday.
No, they absolutely were not.
You know what, though? He got 21 touches.
Right.
I mean, you're going to take that out of a running back. Like, to me, if you started McKinnon yesterday, you didn't make a mistake. He got the volume, and it just didn't work out. And this was also a game that they played from ahead. They were up 24-6 at halftime. And that situation, you know, in the second half, they're going to give the ball to Asiata to grind out the clock. And that's why the disparity between the two this week wasn't as great as it has been the last 2 weeks. You know, 21 touches for McKinnon and 17 for Asiata. So, you know, they're not going to do that every week. Most weeks it's going to be McKinnon. You just got to hope that McKinnon can find the end zone from, you know, outside 10, 15 yards, because we know once they get inside the five, especially, that you're going to see Asiata get to football, and that's where McKinnon's going to get hurt at times.
Yeah, and Tony Cincotta, you know, made a good point over the weekend. He said, you know, McKinnon's a guy that, like, originally was like a multi-purpose kind of player, like a quarterback in college. You know, so you're still learning the running back position in some ways, and if your offensive line is not going to open up holes for you, you know, and you're still kind of like, you know, getting comfortable at the running back position at the pro level is like a full-time guy, you know, that's not a good mixture.
It's not a good mixture. And on the other side, you know, those that are in love with Will Fuller after a couple of weeks, I give credit to Jake, because he's like, listen, he's got a Torrey Smithy. He's going to have these games where he does 1-for-19, where he has 2-for-26. And I think Ronis, we got to kind of throw out games against the Vikings because their defense is that legitimate. But Will Fuller has certainly come back down to earth.
Yeah, I mean, this clearly was the Vikings, and Brock Osweiler is playing like garbage. I mean, he is really bad against these better defenses. Now, we're going to see next week. They got the Colts Sunday night at home. That's a game that they should get well. I think you should see the offense as a whole improve, and that could be a game where Fuller goes off. So I think this was clearly a matchup where you wanted to avoid the Texans if possible. It's difficult to bench Lamar Miller. I don't think you could have. DeAndre Hopkins, I know some people were probably looking to bench him. He saved his day with a touchdown late.
Yep.
And not a surprise with Fuller. But, yeah, right now the Vikings defense is one you really don't want to go up against.
Do you do the same thing and throw it out for Lamar Miller, who, again, Scott, nothing. 8 carries, 20 yards. This is a guy you're counting on, and many people are counting on as their RB1, their second-round pick, a late first-round pick. Has not scored yet. Again, they're in comeback mode quite a bit. Lamar Miller, though, not a bit. It was a disaster yesterday for him.
Yeah, well, they fell behind. Mm-hmm. B, a very difficult defense.
Yep.
So it wasn't a shock. But, you know, this is again well week coming up against Indianapolis. You know, you figure they want to bounce back after being embarrassed like that. And, you know, if Miller doesn't get in the end zone this week, I'm extremely concerned.
Ronis, concerned for you?
No, I think he's going to have a good game this week. He's getting the volume. This is the first game that we didn't see a lot, and it was a product of game flow. So I think he'll get better, and he'll find the end zone. You're going to take any running back that's getting you 20 to 25 touches per game. That's what we've generally seen from Lamar Miller outside of this past week.
You have seen it. Certainly the volume has been there, has not been able to get in the end zone. So you're saying buy low on Lamar Miller right now? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think he's going to get better when you look at the schedule ahead with the Colts coming up. That should be a game he finds the end zone.
And you're saying you have a legitimate concern if he does not find the end zone next week?
This is like the Randall Cobb week, sort of.
Okay.
You know, for Lamar Miller, get in the end zone this week. You know, give me a good game. Otherwise, I'm really concerned.
Let's talk about Lamar. Let's talk about Randall Cobb here for a second, who we said it over and over and over again around us. Either it has to come or it's over, right? It's over. It came last night for Randall Cobb playing a position where the Giants obviously are weakened in that secondary. We knew that. I thought Richard Rodgers would have a good game. Instead, that went to Devontae Adams. But Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams both had big-time games. 9 for 108 for Randall Cobb. His first game over 100 in seemingly 17 years or so. Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb both had double-digit targets in this one. Exactly what you hope to see from Aaron Rodgers. Nelson finished 4 for 38, a touchdown, had a couple bad drops. Cobb, like I said, 9 for 108. And Devontae Adams got on the board, 5 for 85 and 1. What is your trust level factor now on Randall Cobb, and how has that changed?
It hasn't changed much. I think there's still going to be a lot of down games. You know, they made a concentrated effort, though, to get him the football, which is, I think, something you wanted to see. I still feel like this Packers offense is not in sync. Once again, they came out, 2 touchdowns early for Aaron Rodgers. They moved the football, and then they basically got stymied. I mean, it was not good. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, 259, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. It's not a great performance, 23 of 45. So it's the same thing. You know, Jordy Nelson is not explosive anymore. He's not beating people deep. Yes, he scored a touchdown in every game, and he had a lot of targets in this one. But 4 for 38 for Jordy Nelson with a long of 17. So this offense still has issues, but they are going to get the football to Cobb. They even put him in the backfield at times, especially early in the game. But look, I think he'll give you double-digit points in PPR leagues most weeks.
Which is a fine floor.
Yeah, like 8 to 12 is what you're looking for. I mean, I think you wanted more out of him for where you drafted him.
Right.
But this Packers offense is still out of sync to me. I know against Detroit, too, they had the big first half. Again, they didn't do anything in the second half. And in this game, same thing. Early on, moving the football, and then Rodgers with 2 turnovers, and they never could click in the second half.
They never can click. You're absolutely right in the second half. And it's weird because they're moving it in the first half. They're going. They're having no issues. And then all of a sudden, it just gets stymied in that second half. And I don't understand why.
Yeah, you know, Eddie Lacy ran well last night before he got hurt with an ankle injury. You know, maybe they need to have more offensive balance. You know, I think they only gave Lacy just under a dozen carries.
Well, he did get hurt, though.
No, I'm saying even before he got hurt, though, I feel like they should have more offensive balance. Like, teams know that they're going to come out and throw, like, on 65% to 70% of all their plays. I feel like with the way Lacy ran, they should hand him the ball more than
right. They
do.
They
only
have fed him,
only
sure.
11 carries in 3.5 quarters. I think there should be more offensive balance there because, like Adam says, Jordy Nelson is not 100%, and the passing game can't be as explosive without Jordy Nelson being 100%.
I thought, guys, though, that Jordy Nelson got free a few times. Rodgers missed him, and he dropped it. Like, I thought he had chances last night.
He's not beating players consistently, though. He's not getting open deep. He doesn't have that same ability to,
that gear.
To get
yeah.
open. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Giants did a pretty good job on him. When he was making catches, they were contested. And that diving catch, which was a great catch,
sure.
There was a DB right there. But, yeah, they've got to feed Lacy more. Even early in this game, there was too much Starks. Starks sucks. He really is not a good football player, and they keep going to him. I mean, when Lacy is getting going, that's a guy that you feed the football. Yeah. He's a guy that's going to thrive.
He's on his back.
Because yeah. then he's going to wear out the defense. He's going to carry guys with him.
And that was what he was doing last night. He was dragging defenders everywhere last night. 11 for 81. He did leave with what seemed like an ankle sprain. We'll see what happens later
today.
They
don't hand him the ball enough, though. It's just like Adam says. And it's the same thing, like I was saying, Adam, before the show. You could see on that back shoulder, deep downfield, sideline
right.
throw that Rodgers used to make to Jordy that, like, you know, he doesn't quite get the separation from the cornerback that he did 2 years ago.
Right. I think they talked about that a little bit last night as well. As you said, Adam, the extra burst isn't there for him to do that. You have to be scared of him going past you for that to work. we're not quite there yet with Jordy Nelson, who still has been very, very productive, obviously. He's involved in the red zone. He's still Aaron Rodgers' favorite target. So I don't think you're worried about Jordy Nelson, but you're right, that extra gear's not there.
Yeah, I don't think you're worried about him either. You know, he should obviously, too, get better as he gets used to being on the field again because we didn't see him much in the preseason. And
right.
He is getting the touchdown, so you're happy with that, but the days of 140, 150-yard games are probably gone.
Probably gone. On the other side of things, Odell Beckham Jr. scores late, kisses the kicking practice net, which is hilarious. 5 of 56 in touchdown, controlled his emotions. And I thought the Giants actually did a nice job of making sure he was involved throughout the game, targeting him incessantly. And this is obviously a major complaint that I have about Odell and the Giants offense in general is not involving their best player. That wasn't the case last night. I know the numbers aren't spectacular by any means, but they certainly made a concerted effort to get their best player the ball.
Yeah, and I think we all expected Beckham to have a big game. It wasn't really a big game. It was fine fantasy-wise. We just expect more out of a guy that is a top-three pick. He finally found the end zone. But the Giants' offense looked abysmal again. Eli Manning was under pressure. He made some awful throws in this game. He had Will Tye open for a potential 60-plus yard touchdown and missed him. Eli Manning just was missing throws left and right behind receivers, off target. And this was a game that I expected Eli to get going. You know, the Packers' weakness is against the pass. They are not allowing anyone to run on them. They have not allowed over 3 yards per carry in a game this year against the run game. And I think we all knew Orleans Darko was a terrible play this week.
Yep.
And that's what happened. 7 carries for 11 yards. You shouldn't have used them. If anyone you were using in the backfield, it was Bobby Rainey, because you knew probably they were going to be pass heavy in this game. And that's where Rainey comes into play. And he did come through. But boy, this Giants offense, yes, Minnesota last week, fine.
Throw it out.
Yeah, but Green Bay, you expected better from them. And they just look bad.
Yeah, you know, Bobby Rainey, we said this with Shane Vereen before. Bobby Rainey, even when Rashad Jennings comes back, Bobby Rainey's going to have this role here. This is not changing. He led the team in rushing, quote-unquote, with 22 yards rushing, whatever. But 6 receptions, 52 yards, constantly dumping it off. And Giants offense right now, as Rona's alluded to, Scotty, it's out of sync. Eli Manning, who I thought was a borderline QB1, as he has been for most of his career coming into the year, he does not look good. I know he had no interceptions. He fumbled the ball a ton last night. Only one was lost. He did not throw over 200 yards. The touchdown was a great play by Beckham. Eli Manning, this Giants offense, is totally out of sync right now, which is hurting the value of Sterling Shepard, hurting the value of Victor Cruz. It's not a good scene right now for if you own any Giants outside of Odell Beckham Jr. and maybe even outside of Bobby Rainey.
Well, Rainey's interesting because he gives the Giants a dimension that they haven't had before. There's a guy you have in the backfield where you don't know if he's going to get on a run or a pass on any given down, whereas with Vereen, you knew he was just there pretty much to catch the ball, and these other guys can't. So they give him he gives them an element of dual versatility, and we've seen him play well in brief flashes in the past for Tampa Bay, so it's not totally shocking. But, yes, the Giants' offensive line isn't playing well, but then again, Eli just looks totally out of sorts.
He just looks completely lost. I agree with you. And it's very tough, guys, to start Eli Manning. I know he's placing Baltimore next week, which actually has played pretty well. Their defense, I don't know if you could start him. There's enough options out there.
You know, I get to a cutoff point
with
a play where I go, bam. After what I just saw,
right,
or what I saw over the last, say, 2-3 games, I can't start him anymore. I've gotten to that point with Eli Manning where, you know, I kind of like in the first 4 weeks or so, you know, you give guys that old cliche rope, you know, to try to prove themselves that they are who you think they are. And Eli Manning hasn't lived up to it.
Eli Manning has not lived up to it. I agree with you. In a lead that I have Eli in, I was talking to Ronis before the show, I'm splitting with Eli and Flacco. And Joe Flacco throws the ball a ton, Ronis. I mean, they just constantly pass the ball, but he's not throwing it deep. You know, I look at Joe Flacco's numbers yesterday in a game that they lost 16-10. He threw it 46 times, but just 210 yards and one touchdown. And it's weird because Terrence West looked great, 11 for 95, and they don't give him the ball. What is Mark Trestman, this Baltimore offense, doing?
This was so dumb yesterday. This might have been one of the dumbest coaching moves that I saw yesterday. Because Terrence West, which we all thought was a good play, going up against the Redskins defense that's been getting gashed on the ground, has allowed at least 100-yard rushing every single game. And West is chewing them up, and he gets 11 carries. I mean, the guy averaged almost 9 yards per carry. How do you not give him the football? This made no sense. I mean, the imbalance on this offense is mind-boggling. 47 pass attempts and 19 rushing attempts in a game that was close throughout. I mean, they were winning 10-6 at halftime. How do you not feed Terrence West here? This made no sense at all. I don't know what the decision-making is here. And Flacco is putting the ball in the air every single game, 40-plus times, and they're not going deep at all. And you got guys that can get deep, and they're not taking advantage of it. Of course, losing Steve Smith in this game to an ankle injury certainly hurt them, but Flacco's putting the ball in the air. No results.
It hurt them, but it didn't stop them from passing. Instead of throwing to Steve Smith incessantly, he threw to Mike Wallace incessantly. 7 for 63, 11 targets on the day for Mike Wallace here. Dennis Pitta, 7 for 59, but at the goal line, it went to Crockett Gilmore. He was almost used as a goal line tight end, which frustrated Dennis Pitta owners. But besides Dennis Pitta, besides Mike Wallace here, again, you can't trust Rashard Perriman. You can't trust Kamar Aiken, which is just very frustrating because he is throwing it over 45 times a game here, Scott Engel.
Yeah, there was all that talk of swirling winds yesterday, too, which I don't know how much it affected
right.
things. I actually, backed out Duxton Hopkins as my kicker, right before 1 o'clock and, replaced him with a bunch of guys. But, we all know that Flacco, has never been a quality fantasy quarterback. But, you figured with Wallace there that he might air things out more. This offense is never going to be great for fantasy purposes.
Look, if you streamed Flacco the last few weeks, you made a right call. I mean, look at the pass attempts.
Right.
45, 40, 52, and 46. You will take that from your quarterback. It's just not translating to anything because all they're doing is throwing short passes. I mean, his yards per attempt is so low. It's after yesterday's game, I don't know, it's probably around 6, which is not taking advantage of Flacco's strengths. The guy can throw the deep ball, and they're not doing it
at all. He likes to throw the deep
ball. They're just dumping it off.
It doesn't make much sense what the hell they are doing in Baltimore. Facing a vulnerable Giants secondary next week, we'll see if that turns around. We'll see if Steve Smith can come back from this bad ankle sprain. On the other side for Washington, I don't know. None of this exactly was very pretty, guys. Now, Matt Jones
was a terrible start. He was in my sit-em column on Roto Expert Stardom Sit-em, and I understand it's very difficult.
Mr. Bell, yeah,
part of the exclusive
Bell
edge in-season fantasy football package on RotoExperts.com.
We gave him a Bell.
It's a free radio checkout for a special discount. Yeah, you guys had a Bell that you share, and we got a Bell in this corner now too.
I understand a guy like Matt Jones. You say, how do you bench him? Because you know he's probably going to get 15 to 18 touches per game. But this was a terrible matchup. He's not very good. He took advantage of a great matchup in Week 4 against the Browns. I think we all saw that coming. But against a good run defense, you don't want to play Matt Jones. He's not getting it done, and the fumbles you have to worry about. And as Scott mentioned, he lost another fumble yesterday. So only 2 catches for 25 yards, and Matt Jones is going to be a tough guy to play against a solid defense. The Ravens have been pretty good against the run.
They have been pretty good against the run. In the passing game, I don't know if it was the wind or whatnot, but we don't really know. But Jordan Reed led this team, as he should, with 11 targets, 8 for 53. Pierre Garçon, 5 for 56, and a touchdown. Jameson Crowder, disappointing, 3 for 35, but he saved his fantasy day with that special teams touchdown. And mostly, he would get the points for that. Defense special teams, depending on your league, could, as well as him, but he saved his fantasy day with that punt return for a touchdown. Disappointing day from both of these offenses. When we return here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, it was the return of Terrific Tom Brady. We'll talk about the Patriots and Brady when we come back. My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure. Do you enjoy news but hate reading? And the FNTSY News Deck, sponsored by the Daily News, is for you. Plug in and zone out as all the day's top fantasy sports headlines and stories are relayed to you by our experts, Tony Sincotta, and of course, our own Adam Ronis. Join us on the air at 6 a.m., 11 a.m., and 2:30 p.m., or listen at your own convenience by visiting us on demand at FNTSY.com/radio, downloading the FNTSY News Desk on iTunes. Everything you need to know to win only on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Gentlemen, it was a return of Tom Brady here yesterday. And, Ronis, I thought this was the easiest survivor pick probably of the year. Brady's return against the worst team in football, who lost yet another quarterback yesterday, and it could have been two. Brady threw for 400 yards easily, three touchdowns, every single damn one of them to Martellus Bennett. You can tell him a Gronk owner. Brady and the Patriots steamroll Cleveland yesterday. Marty B gets in the end zone three times, 6 for 67 and 3. But if you're a Gronk owner, you're very happy. He looked fantastic. 5 for over 100. This is the Gronk game. We didn't get the touchdowns, Ronis, but we said if he doesn't have a game, we can be worried. I don't think we need to be worried.
It came out yesterday or Saturday that Gronk had his best practice of the week, and clearly he does look a lot better. He says he's still working his way back to 100%, but he was breaking tackles. He looked good. You know, you're a little disappointed, obviously, because Bennett got the touchdowns, but the bottom line is Gronk went over 100 yards and looked good. So I think you're feeling better, and he should have some big games going forward. Then there were a report, Tom Brady and Martellus Bennett don't have a good rapport. Well, that obviously was false as hell because he was going to Martellus Bennett, and Chris Hogan 4 for 114. So I think we all expected Brady to come out and have a huge game. He was a very popular DFS play. It certainly worked out. He's going to be one of the best, if not the best, quarterback going forward in fantasy. The problem is, though, I think they are going to spread the ball out. It's going to be difficult on a week-to-week basis trying to figure out, you know, who are they going to be the guys to produce. You know, Edelman only 5 for 35, but he had 10 targets. I think he'll get better going forward. He's someone in your lineup every week. You got to get Gronk in there every week. And then you got to decide with Hogan and Bennett. We know James White will play a bigger role now that Brady is back. And we saw it with 4 catches for 63 yards. And LeGarrette Blount, not great on the ground, but he did get that touchdown for you. And that, here's the thing with Blount, it's not going to be as good as it was before, but there should be games like this where he's going to get 15 to 18 carries. They're not going to give James White double-digit carries.
Well, the frustrating thing was he had the 18 carries, and he had the goal line looks. One of them got in, thankfully, but he had so many opportunities. I was just wondering, as a Blount owner, Belichick's going to get frustrated and just pull him because he wasn't getting no traction on so many of these runs. I know you saw it, Ronis.
Yeah, and you know that happened against the Texans too, where they kept feeding him and feeding him,
he
and then he
nowhere.
Got in. There was a couple of pass interference calls, and
right.
Then he got the ball at the one, was able to convert. Then he had a big run late against the Texans.
Right.
So I think what you're hoping for, he's going to get the opportunity to finish off drives. He's going to be very touchdown reliant. But if there's any player that you want to be touchdown reliant, you want it to be in the Patriots offense. And then, of course, in the second half, if they do have these leads, he's going to be given the ball to churn out the clock.
He was getting out the ball, although DJ Foster did have 6 for 17. Again, garbage time, I get it. But I'm only bringing up DJ Foster's name, and Ronis brought up James White's name, because I watched Blount run yesterday, and it looked like he was just running in molasses here. It was, he didn't go anywhere. He converted a touchdown, saving his fantasy day, but he went nowhere. And knowing Belichick, knowing the Patriots, one of these games he can get annoyed at Blount for something, and thankfully he didn't fumble. But, and they just pull him for a guy like DJ Foster, Scotty.
I don't know, because he's given Blount a much longer leash than he has other running backs. He brought him back for Pittsburgh, you know, after the whole fiasco. But DJ Foster did get a goal line carry yesterday, too. The thing is, though, is that it's never going to be just Blount. You know, you saw James White with a really nice catch and run. So,
yep.
You know, it's back to what it is with Brady. You can't depend on any of these running backs. You know, in the receiving game, it's clear that he likes to go to Hogan deep, you know, when Hogan's going to be available, because, you know, we've seen him had some injury issues in the past. As far as
checked out for concussion yesterday, returned to the game
and got hurt again.
And got hurt
so, and then with Martellus Bennett, there was an interesting story that was telling Sports Illustrated that he actually hurt his ankle after the first touchdown, and they were offering him the cart. And he said he's been watching the new Luke Cage series on Netflix.
Sounds
and
like the unicorn.
Says, and he said, what would Luke Cage do? He said Luke Cage would get back in there and keep fighting. So that's what I did.
Who do you trust more weekly, Chris Hogan or Martellus Bennett?
If he's healthy, I probably trust Chris Hogan a little bit more.
Ronis?
Probably Hogan.
Okay.
It's close, though.
Do you think that Bennett's just too touchdown dependent? Is that what it is?
Yeah. No, I think, you know, I think we're still trying to figure this out.
Okay.
Because Bennett's really good.
Yeah.
He's a really good football player.
Has been for a long time.
So I do think they get him involved in the mix, but there are going to be times where he has quiet games, and obviously Gronk is going to start to get looks in the red zone. So I think it's kind of a week-to-week thing here.
Other side of things, Cody Kessler gets hurt early, bringing Charlie Whitehurst, who played through his own injury, and as kind of predicted, when a backup quarterback comes in, you rely on your tight end. That was Gary Barnage yesterday, 5 for 76. Isaiah Crowell, a product of what happened in this game, only 22 yards rushing. Given the state of the Cleveland Browns, Scotty, can we trust anybody on this team?
I think usually you should be able to rely on Crowell, but I wasn't surprised that he had a bad outing. I didn't know if I expected that less, you know, low number of yards, but Belichick always tries to take out your best weapon, and you know, Crowell has been their best weapon. Pryor's got more fantasy headlines, but Crowell was the leading rusher in the league coming in yesterday, I believe, or at least the AFC. So I think you should be able to rely on Crowell. They don't have anywhere to go but the ball except with Pryor, you know, although we saw somebody else catch a touchdown pass yesterday. I think you're going to be able to pretty much go with Pryor as a wide receiver 3 in a lot of weeks, and Crowell at least as a flex.
I don't know if we can start Pryor in most weeks. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I mean, maybe Josh McCown just comes back out of nowhere now, but maybe I'll play a little quarterback and you want him in there, but this Browns offense to me is just, unfortunately, it's become a fantasy wasteland given just the injuries here. And with that being said, is Duke Johnson droppable?
Not yet. I think you want to see what the extent of the Kessler injury is, and also McCown could be back soon. But right now, if Whitehurst is at quarterback, then yeah, this offense is a mess.
This offense is absolutely a mess, and we want to talk to you via Twitter, via the phone lines at 844-843-FNTSY, 844-843-6879. And let's start with Steve in New York. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, guys. I have two quick questions, if I can.
What's going on?
The first is, if Detroit signs Forsett today, should I drop Dwayne Washington for him?
Runnus?
No. I don't think Forsett is any good anymore. If he was, he would have still been on the Ravens. So it's still going to be a lot of Theo Riddick, and I think Washington will still get a shot if he is healthy. I just don't see Forsett doing much.
Yeah, they really like Washington. It just, and this is a thing that we've seen, Greg, you know, guys get signed off the street like Ronnie Hillman, and people are all of a sudden, you know, thinking, you know, does that mean I should, you know, pick up that guy, or will he affect somebody else? A lot of these times these signings are just for depth.
I mean, look, you've seen Terrence West go in there, and I know the matchups were good the last 2 weeks, but Terrence West goes in there and runs well. Forsett had his opportunity, did nothing with it, and Detroit's not a team that is going to be a good run team anyway for the most part.
All right, what's your other question, Steve?
The second question is, I'm in a keeper league, and I'm stashing Paul Perkins right now. Do you see him getting more reps throughout the year, or should I just cut bait and move on?
Scotty?
I think if it's a dynasty league or a keeper league? How many do you keep?
It's a keeper league. I keep 3, and anyone off the waiver wire, which I picked up, I lose my last pick next year.
Yeah, I think Perkins gets in there, you know, in certain situations where the Giants feel they might give him an advantage. I feel like, you know, you're not going to see him for more than a few reps a game, but I can't see you using a keeper pick on him. That said, it all depends on what you're cutting him for.
Okay. Yeah, I would be streaming him for defense, tight ends, and quarterbacks when mine are on a bye.
Look, you know, it sounds to me like the guy's cuttable. I don't think you're ever going to have him in your starting lineup at this point. You know, if injuries strike with the Giants, you know, that could become a different issue. But right now, I don't foresee that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Scotty, before we hit the top of the hour, let's read a few tweets.
Okay, Dennis Keller says, no relation to Dustin, need running back help. Should I drop Forte and pick up Gio Bernard?
Can't drop Matt Forte, so no.
No. I mean, I think people are going to see the injury to Jeremy Hill. We don't know the extent of it, and obviously that's going to increase the role for Gio Bernard, who did start yesterday. Not that it means much.
Scott?
All right. Michael Beckerman, am I giving up too much trying to trade away Ware and Charles for Devonta Freeman?
No, you're not giving up too much.
That is.
I would do it.
That might be a hard sell. Might be hard to complete.
I'm good with that. 1 hour down. One more to go. We continue our Week 5 discussion right after this. Hour number two is underway. Here are the Roto Experts in the morning.
You know that's a Billy Joel one you don't hear a lot that I like.
It's one of my favorite Billy Joel songs.
Yeah.
Greg Sussman, Scott Angle, Adam Ronis going another hour with you, the Fantasy BFFs with Adam Ronis and Jake Seely and Nando DeFino. Come your way at 10 a.m. Eastern time. Before we went to break, Adam, you were talking about Giovanni Bernard starting the game yesterday, having even more of a role when Jeremy Hill left the game. We don't know what Jeremy Hill's injury status is going forward, but even before the injury, it was Gio that started.
Yeah, and obviously he'll see an increased role, especially in PPR leagues. I think that's where you like Gio. He got a lot of checkdowns late in the game. Remember, they were trailing in this game 28-0, so that set up for him to catch a lot of passes. He had 6 for 46, 6 targets. And on the ground, when they were competitive early, he was 9 for 50. So I think we've kind of been waiting for Gio to get more of an opportunity, and we might see it here going forward. Let's see what the status of Jeremy Hill is. I think it was a chest injury or shoulder, and he was dealing with something during the week. He popped up on the injury report on Wednesday.
He got taken off the injury report, I think, by Friday.
Yeah, but it might be something that, you know, he aggravated or right. Something that was sore and then got hit and it popped back up again. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. But Gio, we, like Ronis is saying, we've been waiting for it. We've been waiting for this to happen. Not sure how reliable these guys were. In fact, I like Jeremy Hill more, to be honest with you. But it was Gio that started. He did look good on some runs early on, absolutely, when the game was still in hand. But that wasn't very long. AJ Green, nice. You're the Cowboys fans. I want to stick with you here, Ronis. But Mo Claiborne, through the first 5 weeks, he's really coming into his own. He's been picked on for years in Dallas after being what seemed like a top 10 bust. And this year, he's been fantastic. The latest top receiver taken out, A.J. Green, who finished with 4 for 50. And much of that came when this game was already out of hand. Claiborne's been fantastic and is now someone we really have to recognize as taking out these top wide receivers.
Yeah, I just don't think they looked A.J. Green's way enough.
Why?
At all.
I don't get it.
Like, he's one of those guys, I don't care who's covering him. You got to get him the football. So it was perplexing why they didn't go to him sooner. It seemed like a lot of Brandon LaFell in this game with 11 targets and
8 for 68 and
two touchdowns, which both came in the fourth quarter as they were playing catch-up.
Yeah, and it appears that, you know, with this offense, like, and Pittsburgh did this too, that defenses are trying to take away A.J. Green and force Dalton to go with the ball elsewhere, and he's not having a whole lot of success when it counts. Like,
right.
He got the ball of LaFell and pretty much the game was...
It was 20-0.
Yeah, it was 28-0. So, yeah, it was pretty much out of distance there. So they need Tyler Eifert to come back.
They desperately do. Yeah. He very well could return next week in Week 6. On the other side of things, for the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott, his third consecutive 100-yard game here, 15 for 134 for two, including a 60-yard touchdown, seeing that breakaway speed we were waiting for. And the good news for Ezekiel Elliott, only 15 carries. He was able to stay fresh here, not one of these 30-carry games for those that think he's eventually going to hit a rookie wall, which is possible. Good to see only 15 carries here.
Yeah, definitely. He got the production. That's all you care about. You know, a lot of weeks we've been seeing 20-plus touches for him. They didn't need him in this game. They all sprinkled in Morris on a drive, and Morris looks good. Look, if you're an Elliott owner, you got to have Morris, or if he's out there.
You have to.
Because if Elliott goes down, Morris can... He's not as explosive as Elliott, but he'll be productive. I mean, look what he's done behind this line, 6 for 33. I know it's a small sample, but he looks good as well. But Elliott is getting it done. And for those people who were balking at the beginning of the year saying, oh, he's a rookie, he's never got it done, why are you guys taking him so high? Well, now you're seeing why.
He like we said, he's just gotten in shape. I truly believe those that said, look, he looked a little heavy. He wasn't in football shape the first couple of weeks. And you saw it in the week one against the Giants. You saw it in week two. He was getting the end zone. He didn't look explosive. He's there yet. You saw it on the 60-yard sprint. He looked good. Receiving-wise, spread out. Dak Prescott really spread out the ball. Terrence Williams led the way with 5 for 70. Bryce Butler had a touchdown called back. Cole Beasley got in the end zone here, 4 of 53. Dez Bryant still the alpha male when he returns. It's very clear, though, Scott, when Dez Bryant's not there, Prescott's really going to spread out the ball evenly throughout this offense.
Yeah, you know, even saw a nice catch and run from Jason Witten yesterday. Not that
he also dropped one that could have went pretty far.
He was not fantasy relevant, but you know, this offense has balance, and this is what the Cowboys wanted to do 2 years ago. You know, the defense doesn't have a lot of talent, but the offense is controlling the clock. And, you know, they're leaning on the running game. It's helping the quarterback. And they've gotten the formula back that they've had from 2014. And, you know, it's working.
It absolutely is. You talked about Brandon LaFell, both of you guys, a little bit earlier. Is he somebody worth picking up, Ronis?
I don't think you could depend on him week to week. And I think what this team is really missing right now is Tyler Eifert. They are just stumbling in the red zone. We saw it against Miami in that Thursday night game. They moved the ball well. They got to the red zone, and they settled for a lot of field goals. And they didn't get into the red zone as much here. But, you know, again, these touchdowns came late in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at LaFell's other games, there was nothing really impressive at all. He had 3 straight weeks of not doing much. So I think this was just a product of them playing from behind. And he got some production late in the fourth quarter.
So nothing that you're going to write home about here. Okay, so if you lost Tyler Eifert, or you drafted Tyler Eifert, one of the tight ends you may have grabbed off the waiver wire or drafted at the end of your drafts was Zach Miller in Chicago. And Zach Miller, we thought he had a connection with Brian Hoyer. All of you guys, or all both of you guys, I should say, liked Brian Hoyer a lot as a stream this week. And he and Zach Miller did not let you down. Brian Hoyer throws for 397 yards passing in the loss to Indianapolis. Zach Miller, 7 for 73. And Scott, right here on the Roto Experts last week, you picked up.
On the advice of Adam Ronis.
On the advice of Adam Ronis, you picked up Cameron Meredith. And even though Eddie Royal wound up playing this game, did you still start Cameron Meredith?
No, I did not.
Well, you should
have. I picked
him
up, but I wasn't ready to quite start him. But, you know, that could change going forward now. But, you know, they got the ball to Meredith in a variety of ways. And he looked like Demaryius Thomas light in some ways, where they would throw him at like a bubble screen or a flat pass. And, you know, he'd race past, get behind the defense and race past them. So, you know, this guy's undrafted free agent that the Bears liked a lot internally. And, you know, maybe he can be that number two receiver going forward.
Even though Eddie Royal did play in this one, he played a full complement of snaps here, guys. 9 targets, 7 catches, 43 yards. It was Cameron Meredith being the star of the show. He led this team in targets with 12, Ronis. 9 catches for 130 yards. Is Cameron Meredith going to be the name that everyone's talking about on the waiver wire this week?
Yeah, I mean, with the Bears offense playing pretty well right now, Hoyer, 3 straight games of 300-plus yards.
He's not getting benched
touchdowns.
Either.
No, he's not. And they was talk about that this past week. Yeah, I think Meredith is definitely in play here. He's emerging at the expense of Alshon Jeffrey, much to the dismay of his owners. Meredith, yeah, you know, Meredith was minimum priced on DraftKings or close to it, $3,000. And I had him in my lineup, and then when I saw Royal was playing, I took him out. But I went to Sammy Coates, so that worked out.
That worked out all right.
Coates was in a good spot against the Jets. But, yeah, Meredith with 12 targets, and it's 2 weeks in a row that they've been throwing to him. So, yeah, I think he's definitely someone you could pick up. Look, they're not going to throw for 397 yards every week. It was a great matchup against the Colts.
Yep, it was.
Here's the thing about Meredith,
yep.
Greg. It's you can't trust Royal, I don't think.
And to stay healthy, too.
Yeah.
It's true.
Either stay healthy or be consistently productive.
Yeah.
They may have found something with Meredith. The key is now when opponents watch film and see, okay, we have to account more for Cameron and Meredith, How is he going to respond? And I'm confident that he will respond positively because I like his skill set.
We'll talk tomorrow about how much you need to spend on a guy like Cameron Meredith on your waiver wire. But I do want to highlight the fact that Kevin White was leading this team in targets. He was in the top 15 in the league in targets. Cameron Meredith stepping into that role as the number two wide receiver,
right.
a big guy.
Plug somebody else in here.
Exactly.
Next man up.
Let's not forget just the role that Kevin White had. Meredith's in that spot. He could be pretty valuable.
I always say opportunity doesn't always lead to production,
here,
but with Meredith, it might.
It might. kind of like it has for Jordan Howard as well. One of the reasons people liked Jeremy Langford was just market share, was that opportunity. It wasn't necessarily leading the production with Jeremy Langford because he may not be a very good running back, but the opportunity was there. And that was one of the reasons I still like Jeremy Langford, despite what the statistics were telling me at the beginning of the year, because the opportunity was going to be there. Now that opportunity is completely there for Jordan Howard, Scott. 16 carries, 118 yards. Is Jordan Howard an RB1?
He's certainly looking like it. At the very least, he's an RB2. He's the kind of guy where right now you have to plug him into the lineup every week, because I think over the last 2 weeks he's earned that, and the state of running back is such where you don't have somebody you can look at where you can feel comfortable. And
sure,
everybody in fantasy wants to feel comfortable, and it's hard to feel comfortable. You know, this guy's getting the ball in a variety of ways and doing things with it. You know, he's got good vision. You know, he's not necessarily elusive, but he's got deceptive quickness. I think the Bears may have found their guy at running back.
You counting Jordan Howard as an RB1?
Probably high RB2, because look at this schedule coming up. You got the Jags next week, you're fine with that. But then you got the Packers, who have stymied everyone, the Vikings, and the Buccaneers, who are good against the run.
If he plays well in two of those three games, that's what Adam's saying there. That's a proving ground right there. If look, the Vikings could probably stuff everybody. Will Green Bay keep playing run defense like this?
Well,
we'll find out
about Green Bay next week. Yeah. To get Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, we'll find out, and to a lesser extent, we'll find out against Chicago. But look, Jordan Howard, the way you become a good player is you take advantage of the matchups you're supposed to.
Yeah.
And he's done that.
Mm-hmm.
Now can he take his game to the next level and in the tougher matchups be as productive? And here's the thing, is that he's shown a propensity to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield. So even if the rushing numbers aren't great, you might have something of a floor there with the receptions.
You might. I don't think we need to be worried when Jeremy Langford returns. Jordan Howard, just like Brian Hoyer, have both done nice jobs when they stepped in here. On the other side of things, for the Colts, who wound up winning this game, Luck threw for 322 and 2. T.Y. Hilton exploded here. 10 for 171 for T.Y. Hilton. A big-time game for him and the touchdown. And as Dwayne Allen re-entered our comfort zone, if you will, as a tight end, we can start weekly. 6 for 50 and a touchdown.
Yeah, it's a good sign here. You know, like Dallin a lot going into the year, you'd figure in this system with Chudzinski, and they utilize the tight end a lot, and obviously Jack Doyle has cut into it a little bit, but he's been quiet the last couple weeks. So I think Allen is, I don't want to say you count on him again, but I think it was definitely a good sign, and you feel better about him. Part of it is because they're getting nothing from no one else. It's really Hilton, and they're going to look Allen's way more because Philip Dorsett has been an absolute dud.
Dud!
I mean, he has not looked good at all. A lot of people expected him, okay, Dante Moncrief's down, next man up. It is not happening for Dorsett.
It's not, and we're looking at who it could be. I felt like, and the numbers back it up, actually, as I say, I felt like Chester Rogers was targeted more, and he was. 6 targets for him, 3
for
24.
Yeah, they're trying to get involved in the flow. I'm noticing that.
You trust Dwayne Allen going forward, Scotty?
No.
You don't.
That's a Dwayne Allen game, I think, that you get once in a while. If you're lucky, Dwayne Allen catches a touchdown pass. He's clearly a tight end, too.
Jack Doyle, not really involved here, though, so it makes you feel good if you're a Dwayne Allen owner. Frank Gore, I only bring him up in this lineup because I think this is it. This is Frank Gore, 14 for 75. Some weeks you get a touchdown, some weeks you won't. But this is Frank Gore, and that's it. And
I think this is a bad job on the Colts. They should have fed him the football more. I don't know what the Colts are doing.
Robert Turbin wasn't even active.
I know,
yesterday.
But here's the thing, though. Andrew Luck is taking a beating. He got sacked 5 times by the Bears, who can't rush the passer. Don't you want to ease that pass rush and run the damn football? Frank Gore's been good this year. If you look at the numbers, he's been solid. But they're not giving him the football. This was a game where you should have. This game was close. They were up 16-13 at halftime. It's not like they were down 14 the whole game. So they should have had they should have been a Frank Gore game where he got 20 carries.
Yeah, I think the team needs more offensive balance. You know, Gore is, you know, the broadcasters were talking about how much they still admire Gore at his age. You know, he's still getting it done. He's taking a beating, but, you know, he still gives it out. You know, they need to have more offensive balance. You know, the Colts right now are just a mess.
What a putrid division that is, man.
Awful, man.
It is just
absolutely
mean,
awful.
We know the Texans are really not that good when they play better teams.
Yeah.
It's just the Colts aren't good. It's a bad division, man, that we're going to have one of these teams in the playoffs.
It is. Yeah. It's a really
easy
bad
first
team.
Round.
Yeah, and we saw it. Like, whenever the Texans play a good team, they're just not good enough. Brock Osweiler may be one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. He's awful. He is absolutely awesome.
They are missing J.J. Watt, though.
Sure. I'm talking offensively.
But when you're saying how bad Houston is, though, you know, it changes their team a lot.
Yeah, but the offense sucks.
It's painful to watch Brock Osweiler play.
Yeah, and this says a lot about the state of quarterback in the NFL that teams have no choice but to go with Brock Osweiler and give him a big contract or go with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
And they're sitting there saying, maybe we should have kept Brian Hoyer. Look what he's doing in Chicago, right?
And then Ryan Fitzpatrick last year.
Johnny Manziel is available.
He is, indeed.
I actually think he'd be better than some of these quarterbacks we're seeing.
Yeah. Probably not, though, because it's Johnny Manziel and he would be on drugs. So. Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is when he'd be on the field for game day, he might have a few good games better than some of these guys like Osweiler.
Yeah, probably. I don't agree with that.
He's more talented than Osweiler.
Is he?
I think so.
I don't know, man. I mentioned Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ronis, you mentioned when we were talking about Cameron Meredith, Sammy Coates. And it was a very, very good matchup for Sammy Coates on a Jets defense that has proven not to be able to stop guys deep, not been proven to stop guys with speed, and that's with Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis did not play yesterday, and the Jets got spanked 31-13 in a game that we all thought the Jets would keep close. And they were not able to. Sammy Coates led the way, 6 for 139 and 2 touchdowns. And yet, it should have been so much more. 4 drops for Sammy Coates, 2 or 3 of those drops in the end zone. I'm pretty sure he was thinking of his touchdown dance on one of them. Bizarre game for Sammy Coates. But 11 targets tied for the team lead with Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. Where is your trust level factor on Sammy Coates right now?
It's getting higher each week. You know, he did have a lacerated hand where he needed stitches. I mean, he doesn't have great hands to begin with, but I think, you know, obviously that could have played a part. But he's had an opportunity here to move up this depth chart, and he's taken advantage of it. You know, Eli Rogers still out with an injury. Marcus Wheaton has done nothing. And the Steelers will take shots deep. And that's 6 receptions now of at least 40 yards for Sammy Coates this year. And you look at the targets, 8 last week against the Chiefs and 11 this week. Obviously, it was a great matchup. But he's starting to gain more trust, even with the drops. And I know people are focusing on the drops. But in the leagues I had Coates, he was in my lineup. Used him on DraftKings. He was cheap. It was a good matchup. Wanted to pair someone with Roethlisberger. And I didn't want to pay up for Antonio Brown. So I think Coates, especially next week against the Dolphins, he's back in play again.
He absolutely is. The match was fantastic against the Dolphins. I think you have him. You're putting him in your Scotty.
Yeah, and I'll be looking ahead to next week's matchups later today on RotoExperts.com. The exclusive Edge in-season fantasy football package on RotoExperts.com. Enter radio, free radio at checkout for a special discount. I do my advanced scout every Monday where I look ahead to next week.
All righty. Continuing on here with the Steelers, Le'Veon Bell was, Le'Veon Bell, 9 for 88 through the air, 20 for 66 on the ground. That must be nice to have Le'Veon Bell on your team. Antonio Brown, 78 and a touchdown. Jesse James, Scotty, 6 for 43 and a touchdown. If you could only choose between Jesse James and Dwayne Allen, which one would you choose?
They're the same player. It depends on the matchup in any given week. Eric Young yesterday, our friend the pro wrestler, was asking me, do you like Jesse James or Dwayne Allen yesterday? And I said Jesse James because I felt like the Jets can't cover tight end, and he was so wide open on that short touchdown.
So which one would you choose, Dwayne Allen or Jesse James?
Allen. I just think there's less competition for targets in the Colts offense right now. I feel like
I'm giving up on Allen.
Why? Already?
He had a great game yesterday.
I know.
Yeah, but what was he doing before yesterday?
He had a drop touchdown.
I feel like every few weeks he'll score a touchdown and that's it.
Well, it's the same with James, though.
That's what I said. I said it's like a wash for me. It depends on what the matchup is.
The problem with James, though, is there's Antonio Brown. There's Sammy Coates, who's emerging now. There's Le'Veon Bell, who's back in this offense playing receiver in the slot of time. I mean, look at the targets yesterday. 11 for Coates, 11 for Bell, 11 for Brown.
I'm not saying I like James. You know, with Dwayne Allen, there's not much to share, but he's not doing much with the opportunity other than
yesterday. But there could be more opportunity going forward.
I keep hearing that about Dwayne Allen.
Right.
And I haven't seen enough.
So yesterday.
One game.
Let's
see what he does. He can be quiet for the next
2 years ago.
Let's see. Yeah, but the catches, the yardage aren't there. I feel like
they're not there for James either.
I feel like I'm not saying I like James for the third time.
But you picked James over Allen.
No, I didn't say that.
So who's who?
I said yesterday.
Okay,
I picked James
over Allen. Greg asked you,
and I already answered that.
You said James.
I know. I said it's a wash.
Well,
I
pick one.
James.
He asked you a question.
If a
caller calls up and asks James Allen the rest of the way, what do you say?
Obviously, you weren't listening to the show because I already answered it.
All right, and you picked James.
I picked yesterday. Yesterday, he asked me for this season.
Going forward, who do you like better? If a caller calls for James
button?
Or Allen?
Do you have a rewind button?
You picked James, didn't you?
Did you have a rewind button? I said it's a wash. I said it depends on the matchup.
If a caller calls up and says pick one, what are you going to tell them?
I said it depends on the week.
Okay.
That's what I said.
That's not what a caller wants.
You know, here's a way I can put it.
You don't answer the question. That's the problem. No, you don't. You don't understand.
Here's the answer. Here's the answer.
Go ahead.
Because you don't understand it. Okay.
No, you don't understand the question. It's pick one.
You know when people always call in and say there's a rest? Is give me an answer for the
right.
Rest
and there's
of the
not.
Season.
And I agree with you. But
there's
if someone
not
says
a rest of the season,
I understand
answer.
That, Scott. But if someone says, "Hey, I can only roster one right now going
right
forward,
now?
James or Allen, and that's the guy, because someone might pick the other one up. Who are you picking?
Probably Allen.
Okay, that's okay. There you go. It's not that hard.
But you know what, though? If you want to keep... Yeah, but it's...
But people ask these questions, Scott. You've got to answer them. You know that.
There's not a rest of the season answer.
I get it.
You know that.
I get it. But if someone asks you the question and they say, I don't need a rest of the season, it's either Allen or James, I got to pick one. People ask those questions. You got to answer it and give them a reason.
Well, sometimes we can't give it just a simple answer.
Okay, but again, if that's the question and someone is asking you, you got to answer it.
But I will tell them, I'm not going to say... This or that. I'm going to say there's not a rested season answer. Who is this guy facing this week? Use him this
but
week.
But you don't have the option every week to stream guys because someone else might pick the guy up with buys coming up. That's my point.
Now, to me, it's a coin toss between the two of them. They're the same
but you can't
statistical
give,
player.
But you can't give someone an answer a coin toss. That's not what they're coming here for. They're coming here for a definitive answer.
I don't think there is a definitive answer between these two guys.
In 4-4.
If I had to pick one, yes, it would be Allen.
844-843-6879, 844-843-6879, the number to join in. On the other side of things for the Jets, Brandon Marshall, 8-for-114. He looks healthy. 15 targets for him. Combined, Quincy Nunua and Bilal Powell, who are second and third, had 15 targets. You're shaking your head, Scotty.
Yeah, because people are actually asking if we should have benched Marshall yesterday.
Well, that was...
They did?
Yeah.
It was a great play against the Steelers.
Yeah.
I don't see how people don't see, especially after what he did against Richard Sherman last week, how Brandon Marshall's not a must start. It's like they look at Fitzpatrick and they assume maybe Marshall's not a must start.
And he did get lucky on the touchdown.
Yes.
But still, the bottom line is he's going to be fed the football, and this was a great matchup here. Marshall's in your lineup every week. I think Quincy Ndunwa was the disappointment. He also looked like he had a good matchup. And
I still feel okay about him, though.
Yeah, at 4-for-51, though, in this matchup's a disappointment,
yeah,
I think.
That's completely reasonable to say. And the Jets, unfortunately, next week against Arizona, Patrick Peterson matched up against Brandon Marshall. Could create another opportunity for Quincy Ndunwa, but it's a tough spot.
I just feel like with Ndunwa, he's okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's no upside there whatsoever.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because the way they've been running him is like a lot of H-back type routes, you know, stuff like that. And there's no big playability that you see.
They miss Eric Decker. We've
absolutely
talked about Eric Decker for
absolutely
years, how undervalued he has been.
We're seeing it here.
As a fantasy receiver and an actual receiver, and they certainly miss him right now. And the other thing to take note in this game was Bilal Powell. 3 straight games of at least 6 receptions. We talked about him yesterday in the morning. He was a good play. Got him in my lineup in PPR leagues. Again, not huge upside, but 10 to 12 points on a given week in a deeper league or bye weeks with an RB2, I'll take it.
Absolutely, totally agree. It's where he was going to next. We were waiting for Bilal Powell to get involved. We said last week it's finally happened. It's happened again. That's 3 games in a row, like you said, 6 or 7 receptions. Because Pittsburgh was up all game, nothing really on the ground game for Matt Forte, 12-for-53. But if Forte would ever get hurt, Bilal Powell immediately just shoots up as a very, very reliable running back here.
And Forte, only 2 receptions.
Yeah. Bilal Powell is involved in there, man.
It's a problem. I think, you know, again, people who got excited about Forte after the first couple weeks, they're seeing reality right now.
We're trying to find the running backs that we can rely on. It's very, very tough to do so, as Scott has been talking about all morning. You know, Philadelphia was an interesting test call. We'll talk about Ryan Matthews, and if the end of the game will have any bearing on what we see going forward. We'll ask the guys what they think, and hopefully they'll argue. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning that rolls on right after this. All right, returning here on the Roto Experts in the Morning.
Like Aerosmith?
I like that song.
Yeah.
Call Aerosmith song, sure.
I've seen them live.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
Going up to 10 a.m. Eastern Time, the Fantasy BFFs, Nato DeVito, Adam Ronis, Jake Seeley, will be hanging out with you coming up then. Guys, we questioned coming out of the last Eagles game about Ryan Matthews. And Wendell Smallwood is a very, very popular pickup. And all this week, if you would have read the tea leaves, it sounded like Ryan Matthews was relatively healthy, and it sounded like he was going to be the lead back. Yesterday, I believe Wendell Smallwood and KenJohn Barner combined for zero carries yesterday. It was the Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles show, and if it was if there was two running backs, we're okay with that. Matthews had 11 for 42 on the ground, caught a touchdown pass at the goal line. You felt good most of the day because Ryan Matthews didn't leave the field other than for Darren Sproles. You felt good until the end of the game where he fumbled away the game potentially for Philadelphia. Is that a concern going forward, Scott? Where are you on Ryan Matthews?
I don't think it's a concern. I think we know what the concern with Ryan Matthews is. You know, when is he going to get injured? And when is that going to open the door for Wendell Smallwood? So I'm still, if I can, I'm still stashing Wendell Smallwood.
Scott Ronis? Sorry.
Yeah, I think Matthews, as long as he's healthy, is going to be the main guy here.
Okay.
I think that was all the indications we received, and that's the way it played out. You know, he looked pretty good yesterday outside of the fumble, did get into the end zone. So I think Matthews is the guy here. Sproles obviously will play a part in PPR leagues, but
yep.
You know, there's going to be weeks where he doesn't do much. And, you know, yesterday, four catches for 23 yards. He did have 45 on the ground, so that helped a little bit. But he's very reliant on a big play or a touchdown. So I think Matthews is the guy for now that you want out of this backfield.
I completely agree because, like you said, there's going to be weeks where Sproles just does not do enough. And this was one of those weeks, despite the market share of snaps, right? He is getting the majority of snaps right now. But Ryan Matthews, when they want to run the ball, he's the guy, and he looked good. And obviously, he looked good running the ball, but well enough to hold off KenJohn Barner and to hold off Wendell Smallwood for now. Jordan Matthews led this team receiving 4 for 65. Darrell Green Beckham got involved, though, 3 for 43. But it was Nelson Aguilar that actually led this team in targets, Scott.
Yeah, Nelson Aguilar had a really nice catch, too, like just plucking it right over the head of the defender. Doyle Green-Beckham had an interesting catch and run. It almost resulted in a touchdown, but he kind of looked like he was strolling to the end zone. But, you know, that's just maybe the way he plays. They said they were going to get Green-Beckham more involved, but I really wouldn't pick him up. I think Carson Wentz is showing that as a quality young quarterback, what good quarterbacks do is spread the ball
sure.
around, and I think he's been spreading the ball around. We didn't see Zach Ertz involved enough. But
Which
I think,
very disappointing matchup.
I think that will come, though.
Disappointing return, like I said, for Ertz. In all honesty, disappointing game for Carson Wentz, too. I thought this matchup was good for him, 238-2. The touchdown was on a bomb at the end of the game. But disappointing from Ertz and Wentz at Ronis.
I think it was okay for Wentz. People who streamed him, I don't know if you expect – I don't think you could have expected 303 touchdowns.
Okay.
I think two touchdowns was fair, and that's what he gave you. I think we're seeing Green Beckham get more involved in the red zone. I think he's someone to keep an eye on. I think they do want to get him more in the mix, and we're starting to see it. Ertz was a major disappointment. You had to play him. Look, the Lions have been shredded by tight ends all year long. They allowed six touchdowns to tight ends, 18 in the last 20 games. You had to play him, but that's the biggest concern for Ertz is we just don't see enough touchdowns from him.
That's been the concern.
But at least in a PPR league, you were hoping for more. You were hoping for double digits.
Right.
6.7 is just very disappointing.
It's not going to cut it. On the other side of things, despite allowing 24 points, and despite being down 21-10 at halftime, I still believe in this Philadelphia defense here. You look at the numbers, Matt Stafford, 180. We held Matt Stafford to 180, only attempted 25 passes on the day. Three touchdowns, I get it. But I still believe in this Philadelphia Eagles defense that you have been on all year here, Ronis. Theo Riddick had a good day. A lot of that thanks to the end zone. Six catches for 33 yards, two touchdowns. He led this team in rushing, 11 for 49. So I believe in Theo Riddick going forward. Zach Center, seven carries for 9 yards, did nothing at all. Very low-end hold, I guess. Dwayne Washington, I think when he comes back, he'll get his job back, no problem. But no one else in this receiving corps did anything, like I said, on a day where Matt Stafford only throws for 180. Anquan Boldin led the team with 48 yards receiving. Golden Tate, who is going to be much more involved in the offense, we talked about a big day for Cobb, a big day for Tate. Tate let you down here. Theo Riddick did not.
Yeah, I think it's tough to really analyze the Detroit offense passing-wise when you only complete 19 passes.
Right.
You know, the Eagles defense got off to a bad start, but they were much better in the second half, only allowed 3 points. So, I look, Marvin Jones scored a touchdown. He's been reliable. Worst game receiving yards-wise, 4 for 37 and a touchdown.
Touchdown's a nice catch, too.
Theo Riddick still heavily involved in this offense. Even though he's not going to get a lot of touches on the ground, he's going to be involved in this pass game. 6 for 33 with 2 receiving touchdowns. It's not happening for Tate right now. Again, they tried to get him the football. They didn't have much volume in this game. That was part of the problem.
Right.
Bolden, you would have thought, would have been a decent play with Ebron out, but only 4 targets. He did catch 4 for 48. So it's kind of tough to look at this Detroit offense when you're only completing 19 passes in a game.
Scotty, is Golden Tate cuttable?
I didn't want the guy in the first place. Is he cuttable now in a 12-team league? Definitely in a 14-team league. You have to hold on. As far as Theo Riddick goes, he's only going to get rushing yardage on draw plays and misdirections. This is why this team is looking at Justin Forsett.
But is Forsett that much of an upgrade on Theo Riddick? I know
I'm not saying it's any upgrade. Right. I think they need Washington back because you know, I was hopeful on Zenner, but obviously if it's not a preseason game, Zenner ain't making an impact. You know, I was wrong on that one.
A running back that did make an impact yesterday was Shady McCoy. LeSean McCoy in a big win for the Bills over the Rams. Had 150 yards rushing. He had a touchdown vultured away from him. He went down the one another time. It could have been an even more monstrous day. But for those that drafted LeSean McCoy, and you're getting him in the middle of the second round, for those that drafted Shady McCoy, he's just done what he has continued to do most of his career. He's dominated the backfield in touches, and he's just absolutely getting the job done, as Tony Cincata would say, here for Buffalo.
Yeah, he's knocking it out of the park, isn't he? LeSean McCoy is playing at his best level right now. He's making
even against a good Rams defense, too.
Well, the Rams were missing 3 of their starting defensive linemen, so it wasn't the real Rams defense that we saw yesterday. And they were blasting holes, but he makes people miss. He's getting open in the open field, set up one touchdown, and it only got vultured by Mike Gillisley, because sometimes when a guy has a long touchdown run like that, they give him a breather for the next play. I've seen people get him like third, fourth round this year because they were worried about his health and the lack of support on the offense, but he's been terrific.
Yeah, he has been absolutely terrific. The passing game for T-Mobile, Tyrod Taylor, he throws for 124 yards and 2 touchdowns, but this is why you can't really start Tyrod Taylor. It's just not enough here. Charles Clay, I think I would like to know where you guys fit Charles Clay in this tight end receiving, because without Sammy Watkins, Charles Clay is going to really be relied on in this offense. 5 for 73 yesterday. Where do you see Charles Clay fitting in, Ronis?
In a PPR, he's still a tight end 2 to me.
Okay.
I just don't think there's high upside. I think you're looking at 8-9 points a week. You know, 2 straight weeks of 5 receptions. I don't think he's going to find the end zone much. Usually when you see a scenario like this with the injuries, you say, okay, bump them up. But this Bills team is just not going to be a pass-heavy offense.
Never.
It's amazing. They were 0-2, and people were calling for Rex Ryan's job. And all of a sudden now they've won 3 in a row, including one at New England. And
home against Arizona.
Yeah, so they've done a good job here to kind of resurrect their season.
They absolutely have. And they're not going to rely on that passing game, though. Robert Woods, the number one receiver, quote-unquote, just 2 for 26. Again, outside of Shady McCoy. It's right.
Justin Hunter sighting a touchdown.
A touchdown. That was nice.
And what's interesting about that, I think it was USC homecoming day, and, like, you know, he'd played at USC.
Oh, and it was in L.A., you're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And Reggie Bush got 1 carry for 3 yards.
He also played at USC.
Yeah, he did.
And
Robert Woods.
Oh, that's true.
And they all sucked, except Hunter got in the end zone.
Although Reggie Bush.
Woods could add a touchdown.
I don't know if Reggie Bush technically went to USC after everything was vacated.
Oh, that's true,
I don't really know.
But he was there physically.
He was physically. I don't know if he went to class, but he was on campus.
No, but he played football there.
Maybe. I don't know. That's sure still.
But we have video highlights of it.
There. That's real. On the other side of things, Todd Gurley, 23 for 72, also more involved in the passing game, again with 5 targets. 23 for 72 and a touchdown, Scott. We're taking from Todd Gurley happily.
Yeah. It's, the rushing yardage was still hard to come by yesterday, but the Rams are moving the ball efficiently enough to get him some end zone chances, even though Keenum looked much worse than he did the last 2 games, but he's still moving the offense enough to make Gurley viable.
You feeling safer now on Gurley, Ronis?
No.
Okay.
I think, the volume is there, which is great. So you are very reliant on touchdowns. Now, he is getting finally involved in the passing game, but again, Benny Cunningham was out. What happens when he returns? Are they going to go back to being the idiots they are?
Not.
Well, they're not
You're, smart.
They're not. This is not a smart coaching staff, okay? You do not want to rely on Jeff Fisher and intelligence. They just don't go hand in hand. Gurley had three receptions the first 3 weeks, and two of those weeks were negative yards. But he clearly has the skill set to be relevant in the passing game. The question is, will they continue it? So that's really going to help his floor, though. They have to continue to pass him the football because there are going to be weeks where he just gets shut down. And we've seen it already against the Seattle, the Cardinals. And, you know, he's got those teams in his division. You know, he's got the Lions upcoming, Giants, Panthers, Jets are good against the run. So, and he's got Seahawks week 15. So there's going to be a – you're going to be stressed out as the Todd Gurley owner because you're going to be relying on touchdowns.
And you talk about, you know, well coached. You know, it's like these are Jeff Fisher teams is the way he's built them.
Forever and ever.
Is the way he built them with the Titans, except he had a better quarterback with, like, a strong running back, nondescript wide receivers for the most part, and, you know, what he considers a stout defense. You know, they got off to a 3-1 start, but they were exposed yesterday.
This is a Jeff Fisher team through and through. By the way, Kenny Britt, in 5 for 75 yesterday, he's
on pace for over 1,000 yards.
We joked about Kenny Britt before, but this is a guy that, forget ownable, like, should he be started now, Scott? Like,
called a bye week plugger because, you know, he hasn't gotten the end zone and, you know, there's not a level of upside for that offense, but I think he's rosterable.
I think so, too. Tavon Austin, 10 targets. They tried to get him involved, 7 for 59, but I'm never going to like Tavon Austin, and that is still the case. One more game to talk about, and that is Tennessee, Jeff Fisher's former team, and Miami. Outside of Cleveland, Scott, and I know how much you love Miami, is Miami the worst team in football outside of Cleveland?
I think those are probably the two worst teams in football right now.
The Dolphins
have more talent, though. The problem is that, you know, their offensive line really messes things up for the rest of the offense.
Right.
Like, people are killing Tannehill, and his play hasn't been good. But, you know, it's hard because he can't carry an offense, and you know, you're getting him killed all the time, and the defense is just so bad on the back end.
You know, it's tough to get things going, guys, when Ryan Tannehill can – completes 12 passes on the day, 12 for 18, and it obviously kills Jarvis Landry, who has his first bad game of the year. That's not like his fault, though. No wide receiver on this team had more than three targets. Devontae Parker had 2 for 70. It was just a brutal day. Jay Ajayi did lead this team in rushing. He was the guy, 13 for 42 with a touchdown. So you started Jay Ajayi, you're feeling good, but what do you make of this Dolphins offense here, Adam?
Yeah, it's obviously a mess right now. It's, again, Tannehill really didn't have a lot of pass attempts yesterday. He's just 18. He was sacked six times. I think the only guys that you're really relying on anyway, I mean, Jarvis Landry is someone you're starting every week. Devontae Parker looked like he had a great matchup here at 2 for 70 on 3 targets. So considering the lack of volume they have, it wasn't bad. But there's really no one else on the Southridge Carolina. Let's not forget, Arian Foster could be back next week, which nullifies Jay Ajayi.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and how much can you count on Parker where you got a guy who really doesn't throw deep a lot, and then when he wants to, how long is the protection going to hold up?
It's true. It's very, like I said, outside of Jarvis Landry probably, it's very hard to trust anybody for this Dolphins team. I read on Twitter yesterday around noon that people were liking Marcus Mariota as a sneaky DFS play yesterday, and it really worked out. He threw for 3 touchdowns. He ran for a touchdown. Marcus Mariota, fantastic. I almost pulled the trigger yesterday, dropping Joe Flacco, putting in Mariota at the last second, and I wish I did.
Wow. I'm looking ahead to his schedule the next 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Browns, Colts, Jags, Chargers.
Pick up Marcus Mariota, wow. You Eli Manning owners. Get Marcus Mariota.
Cut Eli Manning, add Marcus Mariota?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
I don't know. Eli's got a pretty good schedule coming up.
Baltimore, and we got the home games, the 5 home games in a row he was talking about.
I don't know if you can give up on Eli just yet. We've seen this throughout Eli's career where he does have these down moments, and he was putting up yardage in the other games. The touchdowns were lacking, and I could see this offense putting it together at some point.
I hope so. Marcus Mariota was fantastic yesterday. Like I said, throwing for 3 touchdowns. One apiece for Delanie Walker, Rashard Matthews, and Andre Johnson. Delanie Walker, the receiver to own in Tennessee, tight end technically, 5 for 66. He led the team with 8 targets. Tajay Sharpe, remember when that was the thing? 2 for 16.
Yeah.
And a day that Marcus Mariota was fantastic. Tajay Sharpe.
Him and Zach Zenner make a great exhibition
game. And Will Fuller.
DraftKings lineup core.
Rishard Matthews, like I said, 4 for 32. DeMarco Murray, man, no slowing down. 27 carries. You talk about riding the old guy. It didn't happen with Frank Gore. It has with DeMarco Murray. 27 carries in this one. 121 yards. 5 receptions, 16 yards. DeMarco Murray, no signs of slowing down.
No, and, you know, I'm not surprised by this. Again, last year to me was clearly the outlier where he was in a bad system. Look at his yards per carry. And a lot of people say, oh, Murray was a product of the Cowboys offensive line. He wasn't. I watched the Cowboys all the time. He was not. He was a good runner. He picked up yards after contact, and Tennessee is riding him. And right now, with the way he's playing, I mean, he's probably a top five running back the rest of the way.
He is one of the most fun running backs in the game to watch when he is going like he is going right now. Everybody credited the offensive line in Dallas 2 years ago when he had that monster year. I think you see now it was a combination of the line and DeMarco Murray. Remember last year, Adam People was saying, you know, maybe I'll even draft Darren McFadden in the first round because anybody can run behind that
right.
line. They were discrediting DeMarco Murray. This guy has great vision. He has this unique way of running flat-footed that really keeps defenses off balance. And nobody in the league really shifts their weight and changes direction better than DeMarco Murray.
He has at least 18 points in a PPR league every game this year. He actually topped 20 in the four others, and he has at least 5 receptions in 4 of the 5 games, providing him with a high floor each and every week. I know we saw a little bit more of Derrick Henry yesterday, but that's because Murray had 32 touches, and we're going to give him 40.
I don't see anybody in the league who keeps defenders more off a balance where you think he's going one way one second, and then he's all of a sudden shifting the other way the next. He makes people – he's probably the best in the league, him and LeSean McCoy, who's probably the best cutback runner in the league. Those are probably the two best guys in the league at making defenders miss.
When we return, Monday Night Football tonight between Tampa Bay and Carolina, Derek Anderson gets the start. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. Only one of us on this show called that happening. We'll talk about that and send you into the Fantasy BFFs. Coming up next. It is the final 10 minutes here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Coming up next here on the Free Fantasy Sports Radio Network, it is the Fantasy BFFs. If you want more Scott Engel, you can stay with us noon Eastern time. He returns for Old School Fantasy with the legend, the answer expert, George Kurtz. You want more Adam Ronis? Well, he'll be on the Fantasy BFFs with Nando DeFino and Jake Seeley. I return for On Target coming up at 1 p.m. Eastern. Scotty, Monday Night Football tonight. The Bucks and the Panthers. No Cam Newton, Derek Anderson officially getting the start. What does this do for Kelvin Benjamin and the rest of this Panthers offense?
You know, obviously you don't have the dual threat at quarterback. And, you know, when a team has a time to prepare for a guy like Derek Anderson, I think you expect erratic play. But I think he's going to know that he has to go to Olsen. I think he knows that he's going to have to go to Benjamin. You know, this is a Bucs team that's still trying to find its way on defense after adding some talent. But they're very, very banged up on the defensive line. So Anderson's going to have time to throw, and I think he's going to have time to locate. I think he's going to have time to locate his guys. You know, so you feel very safe with Olsen. You feel very, very safe with Benjamin. Ted Ginn, if anybody's running him out there, I'm actually playing him against him in the league tonight, a 14-team league. Yep, I don't have any confidence in him with him in there. Fozzie Whitaker can catch some passes out of the backfield. I don't think you expect you know, a lot of upside here, but you know, I think you can count on maybe Kelvin Benjamin for a touchdown and Greg Olsen for a touchdown.
I do want to highlight here that concussions are very unpredictable. I also want to make sure you know, short week for the Panthers here this week. Monday, they have play again on Sunday. Then they have a bye. So you might see Derek Anderson for 2 weeks, depending on how quickly Cam Newton recovers from this concussion. We'll talk about the Bucs in a second. You want to note that the Ravens officially have fired offensive coordinator Mark Trestman, where Ronis and I just a few minutes ago were wondering what the hell is going on with Trestman not running the football yesterday. Coach John Harbaugh obviously agrees, replaces him with longtime Eagles offensive coordinator, former Jets offensive coordinator Marty Morningwick.
Yeah, look, this offense has had major problems. You know, yesterday, you could blame the wind all you want. How does Terrence Wiss not get more than 11 carries when he's chewing up the Redskins' defense, when that is a weakness and it was not exploited? And with Flacco, the ball's been put in the air a lot, but it's a lot of short passes. They're not taking shots deep, and that's one of his strengths. So it's not a surprise because something needs to be done here. And they did say they were not happy with the play calling yesterday, and I don't see how you can be.
It's an utter disgrace when Terrence West is running as well as he was running, not getting him the ball. It's stupid. Over to the Tampa Bay side of things here tonight, Jameis Winston goes into Carolina without Josh Norman, without the secondary he used to have. It's not as scary as a matchup for Mike Evans, for the weapons there. The big question will be if Charles Sims plays tonight or if Jaquizz Rodgers gets the start.
I don't think Sims is going to play.
I agree with you. So assuming that happens, is Jaquizz Rodgers, I don't know who you would have and what the deal is, but can you start Jaquizz Rodgers tonight?
No, it's like I said yesterday. This guy's 5'6", 205. Luke Kuechly will blow on him and he falls down. So I think you'll see some of Peyton Barber here as well, and they may try to rely heavily on the passing game because that Carolina secondary, they cut Benictaway. They might be starting undrafted players in the secondary. They're going to try and attack that, but I feel like Carolina's going to come to play, and Jameis Winston could have like a 2-touchdown, 2-interception kind of night.
Does Cameron Brate get in the end zone tonight?
Yeah, I think he's got a good shot here. I think they've been looking for him in the red zone quite a bit, and I think the Buccaneers should have some success tonight offensively.
I'm interested to see what Adam Humphries can do tonight.
I knew that was coming.
That secondary
I knew
as
that
well.
Was coming, absolutely. All right, give me a pick, guys. Tampa and Carolina. Who you got, Scott?
I got Carolina winning this 27-21.
Rodas?
Carolina.
I will also take Carolina for the record. The Toronto Blue Jays, as we head on over to baseball quickly for a moment, Toronto Blue Jays are headed once again to the next round of the ALCS, defeating the Rangers in 3 games. This one an extra inning. Russell Martin hit a picture perfect ground ball double play. Throw from second base, brought the first baseman off the bag. Josh Donaldson never stopped running, Eric Hosmer style, and the Blue Jays advance to face the Indians or the Red Sox. Like I said, only one of us predicted that in this room.
Really?
Me.
That was Nando. He's sitting over there, right?
That was me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Blue
Congratulations
Jays.
Congratulations there.
Eh, whatever. The Blue Jays advance. They're going to get some time off now. Roberto Osuna will be able to get healthy. All these nagging injuries for guys like Josh Donaldson. You're going to have a few days off here. Obviously, they're hoping that the Red Sox and the Indians go all the way. They play Game 3 tonight. A big spot, obviously, for the Red Sox, who try to stave off elimination in the AL. What have you been seeing in the playoffs thus far, Scott?
With a lot of football, I haven't caught enough as I want, though, but I did catch some of that Blue Jays game last night, and I saw, you know, some of the storylines were just really interesting, especially like about Troy Tulowitzki, how he never wanted to leave Colorado, and here he is in the ALCS. But, you know, can the Blue Jays advance? You know, they haven't been able to the last 2 years. You know, Texas put this team together to win.
Sure.
And, you know, Jonathan LaCroix is certainly feeling like he made the wrong choice right now.
I bet he is.
Yeah.
I bet he is.
Yeah.
Toronto, they just need the pitching to get there. Obviously, we know their lineup is good enough. Will the pitching be good enough to get past Cleveland or Boston? Obviously, that remains to be seen.
When wins the American League, though? Can they hold up in the World Series with their pitching? You know, that's what I wonder.
Well, that's absolutely the question. Boston has not been able to hold up thus far. They're going to need to here in Game 3. It is an elimination game for them. But luckily for them, Josh Tomlin's on the other side.
Yeah, they have Clay Buchholz, though, who has been better lately, but obviously they're going to need their offense to carry them, and they have done this before, so they're still in play. And with Toronto, it's amazing. We've seen this numerous times with the wild cards where they play this extra inning game, they get through it, and then sometimes they get hot. I mean, it happened with the Royals.
It happens every year.
It does.
Giants.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works out. So the Blue Jays were battling, extra inning game there against the Orioles. They got lucky that Britton was never brought in. And then all of a sudden, they just steamroll offensively over the Rangers here in that first round. I think the Cubs have looked phenomenal. And I know that's not a surprise because they've done this all year long. But to get that win in Game 1 with the way Cueto was pitching, Lester matched them, just to get that game. And then to get Game 2 was absolutely huge. They played good defense, excellent base running by Javier Baez the other night. They just do all these little things right. Even Jason Hayward's had a couple hits here in the playoffs. they get Kyle Hendricks leaving early with the line drive off his forearm.
Seems to be okay.
No problem. Travis Wood comes in, pitches well, and hits a home run. Aroldis Chapman locking down the ninth inning. Now they get Bumgarner in game three, and even if they lose that, they're still in good shape. So the Cubs certainly looking really, really phenomenal here in the playoffs.
There's a successful pickoff on Connor Gillespie. Classic Joe Maddon, moving Anthony Rizzo technically to second base, having him come all the way in. Javier Baez at first base, they pitch out. Very, very smart managing by Joe Maddon. This is what they brought him in for. Like you said, Ronis, the Cubs are looking good. Now they have a
I feel like with the Cubs, like you have, they, it's always a cliche, you have to beat the best to be the best.
San Francisco.
And I feel like... You know, another cliche, I feel like San Francisco's passing the torch to Chicago.
Well, I don't know about passing the torch, but we said it last week, right? Even though San Francisco's not the champs, it felt like the Cubs need to get past San Francisco.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I agree with you. They have that opportunity tonight against Madison Bumgarner. It's not going to be easy against Bumgarner, but they have Jake Arrieta on the mound as well. And it's crazy to think in Game 4, they have John Lackey, too. It's absolutely fantastic how good this Cubs team is. That is a late game. Boston and Cleveland play at 6 o'clock. An elimination game there. And the other series, 1-1, perhaps the best series thus far, Washington and LA. That is a 4 o'clock start. And it's funny because many people thought Gio Gonzalez should have started game number 2, being that he is a left-handed pitcher, and the Dodgers have struggled so mightily against left-handed pitching. The Washington Nationals get a much-needed win anyway in game 2. Now they have Gio against Kenta Maeda and the Dodgers in game number 3. And for game 4, the Nats are going to turn right back to Scherzer, I would think, and thus... Joe Ross, right? One of those two guys, depending, I guess, on the elimination, will start. Julio Urias, who was shut down, I think, in May, is starting game 4 for the Dodgers. If they are not facing elimination, Clayton Kershaw will go there. Big game for both sides between the Dodgers and the Nationals. They both need it, Ronis.
Yeah, I still like the Dodgers in this series. And once again, Daniel Murphy loves hitting in the postseason. 3 for 3 yesterday.
Crazy.
With a run and 2 RBIs. 667 in the 2 games so far.
667. Scotty.
I haven't watched much of this series, to be honest with you. I've been all caught up.
You're
in
like
football.
I got nothing.
No, it's like I have watched some of the American League, though.
All right, well, 3 baseball games on today. Personally, Monday Night Football game that I have no dog in this fight. My matchups are all over. So
mine aren't.
So no, I will. Use...
I'm looking for a lot from Adam Humphries.
Yeah, that's why you brought on Adam Humphries.
Greg Olson. I got Humphries going in 2 leagues. I got Bright going in 1 league.
Right.
So. And actually, Adam and I, you know, we have a game to be decided tonight.
Fantasy
we're
Cup?
Playing against each other. No,
we're playing against each
pros
other.
We're playing against each other in the pros versus Joes.
Right.
And he's up by about 8, 9
points,
something like that.
I thought it was closer. It might be 5.
Might be 5, and I got Humphries going tonight, and he's got Winston, so I feel like he's going to win.
Oh, I feel good about that for you, Ron. Yeah. I wish I knew that. We'd love to show with that.
Right.
So you're up 5-ish or so with Jameis Winston against Adam Humphries. Got to like where it is for you.
Yeah, but I have Humphries in a league down 12. So.
Ooh.
But then again, if Winston throws the touchdowns to Humphries, I'm good.
That's a good spot.
That's what happens. You play more than one league. You win one, you lose one, and it's based on the same player.
The Fantasy BFFs come up next. Adam Ronis, Nalu DeFino, and Jake Seeley. For Scott Angle and Adam Ronis, I'm Greg Sussman. Have a wonderful day. We will see you tomorrow morning. Mr. Jones.